We pray for a specific teacher this evening who's going to come and teach us. But apparently he's going to talk to us. We ask, Lord, that you are with Keith in the words that he is going to share with us this evening. Open our hearts, our ears and our hearts to hear what it is he has bringing to us that we need to receive from you. And we just thank you, Lord, that he's a gifted and talented and important part of this church. And just pray blessing upon him. Amen. So I usually try and prepare on a Sunday by finding out the title for the sermon. And so I wasn't able to do that because my technology went a bit wrong. So I asked Jeremy to find out. And he started by telling me it was going to be Town Defences in Early Modern England. But apparently that isn't the sermon for this evening. It's a PhD title from Keith. And his talk this evening is Changing Perspectives, Personal Journey Story, which I think sounds very exciting. And I have to say, I'm very honoured to be the person that welcomes Keith up, because I'm truly excited about what he has to say, because I know what he's going to say matters.
No pressure at all. Can I just point out that in 20 years I sold two copies of my thesis, so anyone who wants to buy one, come and see me. Does anybody know what the winning joke was for the Edinburgh Festival this year? Excellent. That's it. Precisely what I'm looking for. It is this. I'm not a fan of the new pound coin, but then again, I hate all change. Okay? It's not bad. It's not a classic, but it's all right. Bearing in mind we couldn't remember this year's, can anybody tell me any other year's Edinburgh joke? No. Well, I can remember one, and I didn't look this up. I just remember it because I thought it was quite funny. And that was, I've taken all the German names off my mobile phone. Now it's hands-free. Excellent. Anyway, as I said, those jokes, some of them are quite good, I have to admit, but they haven't got into the national psyche. You know, we're going to struggle to remember those in a couple of years' time. But if I was to say to you, have you heard of a joke which goes something along the lines of, why did the chicken cross the road? Then I'm pretty sure, even if you can't remember a punchline, you're at least going to know what I'm talking about. They're jokes which have gone through the sort of decades. I have to say, as a bit of a would-be comedian, I tend to look down my nose at those. I think they're a bit childish. But in recent months, I've had a real epiphany with that type of joke. And I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking you through it. And thank you, Martin, in a minute. Don't get ahead of yourself. I'm going to talk you through it. And there is a reason for that, believe me. So can I introduce you to our chickens? Go. Okay, let me just introduce you. On the left there, the brown one, she's called Brownie. The one on the right, the dotty one, she's called Dotty. And on the basis of that naming scheme, you'd have thought the one in the middle would be bluey, grey, something like that. But for some reason, it's called Tallulah. But hey-ho. Anyway, those were our three chickens. And like most people, when we first got chickens, you think, oh, great, I'm going to make them all free range. So they've ranged across the garden. And that lasted a few months until the kids said, we don't want to play football anymore because chicken poo absolutely everywhere. And they're absolutely right. Chickens were destroying the garden. So eventually we put them into a cage. Now, we're not battery farmers. It was a cage the size of this room. It was giant. And even, you know, then I felt a bit guilty. So every now and then I would let them out on a bit of a holiday. And one Sunday afternoon, I let our chickens out, you know. And they were quite happy. They would always come back. So I let these chickens out. Away they went. A couple of hours later, I thought, I'd better go and see what they're doing. So I walked out of our back gate, and there's a dead-end road there, so it's totally safe. And these chickens were walking towards me. And I was thinking, great, they're going back home. Just then, our next-door neighbour, or two doors down, Steve, comes down the road in his pickup truck. And these chickens go absolutely ballistic. They bomb burst everywhere. They run around literally like headless chickens, okay? Which is ironic, because that's how they ended up about 2 months later when the fox got them. But anyway, one of them, Brownie, sort of goes left down a hill away from us. Tallulah runs straight into me. I'll grab her. Dotty runs up the road. So Steve dumps his car, middle of the road, you know, jumps out, says, I'll get her, and runs after Brownie. I dump Tallulah into the pen, and then I go looking for Dotty. And Dotty had gone past the next house, because they got a dog, and into the next one. And I'm, you know, it's one of these comedy moments where you're sort of walking along, it's following this stupid chicken. It goes all the way down this person's garden and onto a wall, right? And the wall is one of these ones up here. the chicken sat up or stood up on this wall, and I'm sort of doing this bit, trying to catch the thing, knowing as soon as I go near it, it's going to jump off the wall, which of course it did. Little did it know, of course, that it jumped straight onto a dog, which was the next door's one. So it wasn't laughing so much then, I said to it. But anyway, so I picked her up after she sort of ran away in a bit, put her back in the pen, leaves us with one, okay, which is Brownie, still on the loose. So I go looking for Steve. Steve is on the other side of the main road, and he's looking in this hedge, bottom of the hedge, ferreting around down there. So I go across him and says, Steve, what is happening? He says, well, I saw her in this hedge, but now she's gone. And if you go through the hedge, there's a road below, which is a sort of private road, and there's one house. I haven't got to the punchline yet. Hold on. Anyway, so we go to this house. Yeah. Go to this house, and Steve says, can't see the chicken, bet it's gone around the back. I'll tell you what, you knock on the door, I'll go and go around the back. So I'm thinking, hold on a minute, this could be brilliant. And I go up to the door, and I'm praying at this point. And forget the chicken, I'm not praying about the chicken, I'm just praying that somebody's in, because I've got a great line coming up. So I knock on the door, and you know, as we know, prayer is answered. Bloke comes to the door, and he opens the door, and I'm thinking, yeah, this is going to be brilliant. I utter that immortal line. Look, mate, you're not going to believe this, but my chicken's just crossed the road. And then I wait, hoping, praying that he's going to pick this one up. I'm thinking, I've teed this one up for you. You've just got to knock that one into the hedge. But he sort of goes, huh? And I thought, oh, so wasted. And I was just about to lay into him, saying, look, come on, how often do you get that type of opportunity? Steve runs around the corner with a chicken going, I've got her! All right. The bloke looks at me and I said, don't worry, we got her, that's fine, and away we go. And I don't know what he thinks of his neighbours up the hill, but for me, that was, I'd say, an epiphany. It was the time when I realised that that joke had got a whole new lease of life. And it means, of course, if anybody ever says to me, why did the chicken cross the road? I'm going to say, well, because they were chased by Steve, that would be an obvious one. It'll make me laugh, if not them. But more to the point, and my whole talk is about new perspectives. It gave a new perspective to an old joke, as it were, to an old thing. And the rest of my talk, hence the long-winded way of getting to it, is about changing perspectives. And isn't just a sort of whim where I thought, oh, what should I talk about? I know, I've got a good joke, I'm going to talk about that. It's about something which has been sort of working its way through me for about a year, I would say, since about this time last year. But I did say, I have to say, that I was unsure whether or not this is the type of thing I should be standing up and telling you about, simply because it's going to be mainly about me. And you know, interested as I am in myself, you may not be as interested as I am. But I was reminded of a poem called Ithaca. It's a poem written by Homer. You know, well, it's not. It's about the stories written by Homer many, many centuries ago. And Ithaca is about the journey of Odysseus, I think that's right, back to his homeland of Ithaca. And the whole point of the poem is that the journey is the important thing. Actually getting to the destination wasn't important, but the journey was the important thing. Now, we as Christians, I think, would probably disagree. Actually, the destination is actually quite important. But I think there is a value in that thing about the journey. And the key thing for me is that that's the point we're at now. We're not at the destination. We are actually in the journey. And so that's the bit where I can probably feel most qualified to talk about. And I think there is a value in hearing how others are doing along that journey. And I was quite encouraged by Dave, and also Matt said the same thing, that we've probably heard enough preaching about you know, what we should be doing, we just need to go out and sort of do it. And I'm not saying that I've gone out and done loads of really important Christian things, but this is my sort of attempt to do something and tell you a little bit about it. And I see that John there is tapping away on his iPad, and I think, John, at this point, you'll probably close it because it's not going to be much help to you. I remember going to a talk by Adrian Plass, and he said he started this talk and loads of people got out notepads and so on. And after about 5 minutes, the woman in the front row just closed the book and put her pen down and thought, you're not going to hear anything worth hearing from this guy. And I'm telling you now, John, you're not going to hear anything worth writing down, I don't think. But we'll see. Anyway, let's get back to changing perspectives. So this time last year, I went to Georgian. And that weekend was led by Chris White. And one of the things we were asked to do was listen to God, what God was saying to us as individuals, and then sort of share that with the group. And I was prompted by two words rather than some great prophetic wisdom. And those words were outdoor education, which you might think, that is a bit random. But to me, yeah, it does have a meaning. I've spent a lot of my life in the outdoors, and I've spent a lot of time doing outdoor education. I met Rachel whilst working at an outdoor education centre. And my first words to her were on an outdoor session, a kayaking session. And those words were the immortal, stop screaming, shut up, listen to me and grab hold of the kayak. And I have to say, those, you know, I'm not really into prophetic words, but those are prophetic because I've used them pretty much every day of my marriage since then. Now, Chris encouraged us. He said, look, you need to sort of follow that up. And what does it mean to you? So immediately I thought, well, I'm going to get a job as back in the outdoor world. Wouldn't that be great? But I have been looking. I get a lot of emails from companies saying, do you want to work doing this X, Y, Z? But nothing has really sort of hit the spot, as it were, where I thought, yes, that's what I'm supposed to be doing. So I then start thinking, well, is that what God is really asking me? So I'll leave that thought with you. I will come back to it. There is a reason to sort of mention it. So if I can then move on in my journey, as it were, to May or June last year, I can't remember when it was, where we had the Leaders' Day out in Mells. And one of the exercises we did there, we stood in two lines, right? And we had to pray for 1 minute for the person opposite us, yeah, to see what God revealed, or if God revealed anything about that person or for that person. And I have to admit, my sort of heart sank when I saw who was opposite me. Because the person opposite me was the... I'm going to be paying you a lot of money in a minute, I'll say later. The person opposite me was the type of person who was going to come up with a full surround sound, Technicolor sort of picture. And unfortunately, mine tend to be a bit more sort of Betamax, sort of 8-track cartridge in return. So, bear in mind the last time I'd done an exercise, I'd come up with two words, outdoor education. You know, I wasn't exactly onto a roll there. But true to form, this person did come up with the IMAX 3D vision, and it was brilliant, and so was the interpretation. And I won't tell you what the vision was, or the picture, but I'll tell you the interpretation. And it was that, if you can only see yourself the way that God sees you, and you allow God to release you to that, then there'll be no stopping you. And basically, the person said, you need to sort of change. You need to look at how God sees you and change your perspective even. And true to form, my return picture was slightly less impressive. If it was two words, a few months earlier, I got it down to a laconic one word, was what I felt that God was saying for me to say to that person. And they were kind enough to say, well, yeah, that actually means something to me. So, move on a couple of more months. Okay, we're a house group, and you'd be surprised to know, at our house group, we occasionally do study the Bible. It's not just me talking about myself. So we were studying five books. Okay, and they were these ones, 3 John, 2 John, Philemon, Obadiah, and Jude. And I'd like to say there was a more spiritual reason to why we were studying those books, apart from the fact that they're the 5 shortest books in the Bible. But unfortunately, I can't think of that. I just thought, that'd be really interesting. Let's do the 5 shortest books. And I have to say, it's been really good, because I know all you lot out there would probably study them in depth, but mere mortal such as myself has tended probably in a Bible in a year just to skim past some of those without really thinking about it. And we talked about them each book for a week, and I got a lot out of it, and I managed to do a whole end of term service for my school based around 2 John, and I can guarantee you nobody has ever preached at Colston School on 2 John. So I was very pleased with myself, as you can tell. But it was the book of Obadiah that I want to focus on just very briefly. Because again, that brought me back to this idea about changing perspective. And if we can turn to that, I'm just going to look at just a few verses from the start of Obadiah. And if anybody's struggling to look for it, I'm not going to be much help, because I can't remember where it is. I took this straight off the Bible Gateway. So we're looking at Obadiah, and we're just going to look at the first 4 verses. And it says this, this is from the NIV, the vision of Obadiah. This is what the sovereign Lord says about Edom. We have heard a message from the Lord. An envoy was sent to the nations to say, rise, let us go against her for battle. See, I will make you small among the nations. You will be utterly despised. The pride of your heart has deceived you, you who live in the clefts of the rocks and make your homes on the heights. You who say to yourself, who can bring me down to the ground? Though you soar like the eagle and make your nest among the stars, from there I will bring you down, declares the Lord. And you know, I'm not going to give you a great new revelation about the book of Obadiah. I think far more intelligent and well-read people have already explained really what that's about. And for me, it was for the first time I was reading, actually looking hard at what it meant. So for me, you know, those verses from 3 and 4 are things that really stood out. But they're sort of setting out the disaster that's coming on to Edom, you know, despite the strength of the city and the fortifications. And the reason for that comes in the following verses, that despite being related to the Israelites, the Edomites refused to help Israel and Judah in their time of need. And then when they were down, as it were, they went and kicked them. They went and stole more stuff. They plundered them themselves. But as I said, it's verses 3 and 4 which are particularly stand out to me. And Claire has sort of hinted a little bit to that, because many years ago I did write a PhD on town defences in early modern England, and anything about fortifications always sort of thinks, oh, I'm interested in that. But, you know, the key point here is that they were, you know, secure in their own sort of fortress high up in this sort of defended valley. And if they'd have heard Obadiah's prophecy, and I don't know if they would have done, you know, they probably thought, you've got to be kidding me. You know, we are going to survive. We've got this strong place. And it's going to be Judah and Israel that are going to disappear. But, you know, just by the end of the first century, you know, Edom had been routed and disappeared as a nation, and they had gone. And again, this brought me back when we were going through it in house group, thinking about perspective. Because the Edomites were secure in their own resources, their own abilities, the strength of their fortifications. And yet those fortifications now are nothing more than a tourist destination. You know, like most fortified towns, they've long gone past their original use. But when I was reading it and we were talking about it, you know, the thing that came to me was that need to remember that God's perspective is infinitely more wise and more sort of far-seeing, better informed than ours. And there are some similarities. Rachel will tell you, my wife will tell you, there are similarities between me and the Edomites long after, or outside of the sort of interest in fortifications. She will tell you I am far too self-confident, that I have, you know, far too great a belief in my own abilities, and that, you know, I better beware because of what befell the Edomites. And then just a few weeks ago, if I come on to my, I think it's my third sort of example, you know, again, Chris White, he was did a service about listening to God through nature. And during that service, he played some clips of, you know, changing landscapes or, you know, different natural landscapes, and asked us to say, well, what is God putting on our hearts? And then, you know, we got together in groups and we discussed it. And it was really interesting to see that, you know, what people were prompted about just looking at the same set of images. And for me, it was, again, it was a really powerful thing. It was just before that, I'd been down on Dartmoor. And I've always wanted, had this ambition of spending a night on Fir Tor, which is the most remote part of Dartmoor. So I'd gone down there, and, you know, to some people, Dartmoor is really bland. It's just rock and grass, which, to be fair, you know, in a way it is. But, you know, I spent a lot of time there. Well, there's a few, but believe me, not up on the top of the one. You know, I got there quite early, and it was a long time till dark. So I just sort of sat down and just watched and just saw, you know, what was happening to this landscape. And over a period of 2 or 3 hours, you could just see, even in this completely bland landscape, a great change sort of going on. You know, of course, it was inevitably going to rain at some point, which it did. Mist rolled in. The wind blowing across the grass sort of ruffled it. You could see the, you know, these few animals moving. It was amazing just to sit and watch the light change and so on across the landscape. And that sort of got me again thinking when Chris started talking about, well, you know, listening to God through the landscape. It brought me back to this idea of change and the sort of word I'd had back in May or June, which is about, you know, if you can see the way that God sees you, then there'll be no stopping you. Now, at some point, and if I was sat out there like you lot, I'd be thinking, you know, if Rachel was up here talking, I'd be thinking this, and, you know, she would understand this. I would say something on the lines of, look, you've been told 3 times to get on with changing perspective. Can you get a grip and get on with it? Yeah, that's what I'd be saying to her. And Rachel, if you're listening, you know that's true. And so let me give you an analogy and it's this thing. This is what my children call my pirate telescope, right? It's indeed a telescope. Nothing particularly spectacular about it. If I ever get it out of work, I've stopped doing it now because inevitably somebody will say, where's your parrot, crutch, eye patch, treasure trove or something, any other, you insert the pirate pun. But I love this thing. It's absolutely brilliant. Now, when I got it, of course, I got it out of the packet, just like I've done now, and there's a little set of instructions with it. And of course, who on earth is going to read a set of instructions for a telescope? Absolutely no chance. Binned it straight away. Go out the door, look in it, and obviously I'm looking through the right end, can I point out? I'm not a complete idiot. I look through the right end, and I cannot see a thing. All right, literally, it's just a sort of fuzzy white thing in front of me. And after a lot of time of sort of moving things in and out and prattling around with it, I eventually think, okay, I'm going to read the instructions. So I go back to the instructions, get them out of the bin, and to be fair to me, they weren't exactly extensive, all right? There were three little pictures, which didn't make a huge amount of sense, and then one sentence which said this: pull out all the sections fully and focus by moving the final section, the Barlow lens, this thing, in and out, and then, if necessary, turn this bit here, right, and it'll focus. So I thought, well, that ain't that difficult. Went outside, did it, pulled the sections out, moved this bit in and out, tried turning that bit, still couldn't see a thing, absolutely nothing. It's just like looking at this white fuzz. So, of course, didn't ask Rachel's advice, no way I was going to do that. My next door neighbour came round, and he's a bit of a seafarer, so, and he looks a bit like a pirate, amazingly. So I said, look, Clive, you're no telescopes. Why can't I get this thing to work? And he said, I don't know, what does the instructions say? So I gave him the pathetic instructions. And he said, it says pull out these sections fully. All right? And then he did this. And he pulled the final section, or the first section out fully. Put it to my eye. Of course, I can see absolutely everything. So annoying. It took me 4 days to get to the point where I could actually use that. And the way I'd been using that telescope, I think, sort of is very similar in a way to the way I've been treating that word, or two words for me, the outdoor education word. Because if you can imagine this telescope as those two words, outdoor education, I had done something. I picked up those words and I changed perspective in a way. I've been thinking, well, what do I do with it? Okay, but it had been in my own way. I'd immediately thought, oh, as I said, great, I can get a job kayaking again, sitting around in the sun. Immediately the kids would be starving because there's no money in it, but hey, I'll be doing God's work, on a kayak. Brilliant. But as I said, nothing really happened, because I was looking at it from my perspective and thinking about how I could use my skills. And it was only when I sat over the last 2 weeks, I've heard from Matt these sort of values and visions, the things that were presented to us last Sunday, it occurred to me that actually I hadn't been looking at it from God's perspective. Because if you think about the order, I was given those two words, outdoor education, and then the next three or four things have all been change your perspective. Yeah, it's not new set of words, just change your perspective, as it were. So this, what did that mean? Well, if we go back to, the verse from Matthew 28, verse 19, which says, often says, go and make disciples. But, you translate it, Matt, as you go, go and make disciples. In other words, on your journey of life, as it were. And for my journey of life, particularly during term time, it is one where I'm at work or I'm asleep, it seems, one of those two things. And at the Leaders' Day yesterday, one of the things we were asked to consider was, what are the barriers to making disciples? And, apart from being antisocial, which, fair enough, that's me. The other one is that at work, I'm on the management team. And as all teachers here will know, that all managers do is come up with, spreadsheets with unrealistic targets, and then go and beat up teachers saying, why has that person not achieved that? And if we've got any other spare time beyond that, we'll come up with a pointless policy and then enforce it rigorously. And that does tend to affect your relationship with your colleagues, because, I can remember being not like that, and now it is a very different situation. But also, yesterday, we were asked this question, and forgive me, I need to read my poor handwriting. It says, that wasn't a joke, that one, it literally is poor handwriting. When are you most likely to be used, and, how have you helped someone into finding Jesus, or further along their journey? And it really sort of struck home to me that this was what I was, my whole of this talk was sort of leading to, because I was, outside of work, the only time I really get to talk to my colleagues and to have a sort of relaxed time is when I'm out in the field with them, when I'm out doing some form of expedition or so on. Because we have literally got hours, if not days, where you've got no distractions. I haven't got a spreadsheet. There are no mobile phones. There's no power. There's just us, a minibus, normally rain, a bunch of kids who are inevitably somewhere where they shouldn't be. And we're sitting around a lot, doing a lot of waiting. And I thought back over the 20-odd years I've been doing Out the Red within schools, and those have been the times when I've had those conversations, which I would never normally had because I'm antisocial. You know, once we get through the point that all the staff have realised that as a member of senior management and they can complain about anything, once we got through that bit, we then have some really good discussions. And, you know, it sort of struck me, perhaps that's that really simple thing that I'm actually supposed to be doing. Not swanning off and getting a nice job in the sun, you know, in France and leaving everybody else back here or whatever it might be, but actually using the opportunity I have. And you know, last year, well, coming up September, I did the most outdoor stuff I've done for a number of years. And I was, again, doing that in a way from the wrong perspective, because I was trying to re-qualify, trying to get my qualifications back in date so I could go off and get this nice job in the sun. But in reality was, perhaps I was just getting myself back into that sort of thinking that that's the time I spend with my colleagues, the time when I can be a disciple maker. So coming back to my telescope analogy, you know, do I think I've got God's perspective perfectly in focus now? Well, I have to say, probably not. Really embarrassing, I went out with this just before I came down. I could not get it to focus at all. It's so annoying. You know, even if I could get it to focus, anybody who's used a telescope will know that even when it's in focus, you've got to keep moving it. You've got to keep moving this final one, the Barlow lens, just to keep things in focus. You've got to keep your eyes on that target, keep your eyes on God and where he's taking you. And you know, what I could say is I think I've got to the point now where at least I've extended all the tubes to give myself a chance, and that it may not be in focus all the time, but there's going to be lots of times when it is. But I hope it's not just me who's sort of challenged by the sort of idea of looking at things from a new perspective. I'd be very surprised that anybody who listened to our presentation last Sunday sort of came out without thinking, well, actually, on the basis of those values and visions, that there should be something we might be doing differently in church. There are some challenges on how we view church. And, you know, I spent, you know, 20 minutes or whatever it is talking about myself. So right at the end, I thought, I better try and give you something to think, well, actually, that was more than just a monologue about himself. So two things I think we can take from my monologue, as it were, as we sort of contemplate 10 years of church into the future. Well, first thing, let's go back to the why did the chicken cross the road joke. Yeah, I would say we've got to be prepared to look at an old thing in a new way. And when I say old thing, obviously, I don't mean Matt. I mean, he does look quite old, but I'm talking about the church. Okay, we need to be prepared to look at the church in a new way. And if we do, it can bring a whole new perspective, a whole new lease of life to it, in the same way as happened in my joke. And secondly, far more obtuse and a bit weird, you know, we need to make sure that all the tubes on God's telescope, if I'm going to say that right, are fully extended. And if that's not a surreal way to finish, I don't know what is. So,
I was saying yesterday to Jean-Phi, we were at the leaders morning, and thinking about this whole idea of, you know, making disciples, as Keith was saying. And when we got home, I was saying to Fee that, you know, it's great, isn't it, when we have new people coming in to the church and, you know, becoming disciples. But I think it's just so encouraging when we hear about those stories where people, you know, within our church, what God is doing in their lives and changing them and, you know, growing their relationship with him. So thank you for sharing that, Keith. I thought that was really, really encouraging. And I'm sure, you know, God's doing lots of other things amongst us.